Oh man, I can't tell it in public.
Hi, hello. Welcome. Did that sound like my voice was AI? It's not. Welcome back to Wild Business Growth. This is your place to hear from a new wild entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning, turning wild ideas to wild growth. I'm Max Brandstetter of Max Podcasting, and this is episode 351, Area 351. Today's guest is Fran Meyer, the founder and CEO of BabyQuip, the number one baby gear rental service for traveling families. Fran was also the co-founder of Match.com, which in the 90s was the first online dating site. In this episode, we talk how Fran makes these seemingly complex, crazy complicated businesses as simple as possible, how to get really, 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 really good at defining your target customer, and a little taste of New Mexico. It is San Francisco. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Fran Meyer, who's done many, many things in the business world, but most recently founder, CEO of BabyQuip. Awesome. Close to home company as a new parent.
All right.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. So really, really excited to talk with you all things that and beyond today. Fran, thank you so much for joining. How are you doing today?
Great, great. Better now that I know you're a customer. Or are you a customer?
We can't say this on the record. We'll say it on the record. Not yet, but that's because I just discovered your company. I think it would change how we do all our vacations, so we'll have to try you out next time.
Okay, for sure. I'll send you a promo.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Before BabyQuip, I have to start with Match.com. I'm someone who, funny to say, growing up, I knew about Match.com and Match Group forever. But when I moved to New York City, it was really the first time I'd used dating apps. And, you know, there was all the like Tinder and Bumble and Hinge. And I know many of those are still popular today. But I can't imagine working on like the first ever dating site back in the 90s. Can you take us to like the weird looks and laughs and questions you got in 1994?
Oh my God. Well, like, you know, we were inventing a new category, right? So we called it online matchmaking. Eventually it became online dating. And by the way, back in the mid 90s, we weren't talking about dating on the apps, right? Apps weren't even a thing. In fact, we had to, I'm not sure if you'll get it. We had to deal with a 14-4 in a 28-8 environment. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is that pixel? That's pixels?
No, it was baud rate. Most people were dialing up, okay? So, you know, a few things that if you really try and put yourself back into 1995, and were you born yet?
Yes, I was 92. So I was not quite ready to date yet, but...
No, not quite. Right. So, and you weren't a Match.com baby.
Nope.
So back then, most people didn't have digital cameras. Because most people were doing dial-up, we had to have very light graphics. We didn't have photos, okay? We only asked 5 questions when we first went out because we wanted to maximize the chances that somebody would match. But also, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of room to ask a whole lot of questions. And a lot of the questions had to do with, you know, how you looked, right? Now, I'm famous for this. I'll share it with you now. Have you ever had to put your weight in pounds on a dating app?
No, I'm sure that could cause all sorts of issues.
That that's because of me, okay? I mean, we knew that we wanted to target women. And by targeting women, I knew that asking the weight question was a non-starter.
That's brilliant. That's it. Well, you look at like Hinge today, and you know, some of these apps have gotten so good with conversation starters. Can you imagine if there was a line there? So how much do you weigh? Share your body metrics.
Yeah, exactly. So we did body type, which did well enough. And some have suggested I shouldn't have asked about men's height, that that is a very sensitive thing, but I could only do what I could do. We also came up with a membership model. Now, to be clear, there were a lot of online personals back in 1990, but they just followed what the newspapers were doing. And they didn't have funding and they weren't targeting women and they didn't have somebody like me with a marketing background. So we very quickly became the number one. We were also so efficient that, and again, we were so early, which is sometimes a problem when you're too early in a market. I had to show that all my advertising spend paid out. Can you imagine for a social network, essentially, that's based on having critical mass that I had to pay out all my ad spend? And guess what? We did. I mean, you've got this look on your face like, what?
Well, I have so many. I mean, we could do like hours and hours about, you know,
Oh, we
this
could.
chapter of
And we
your
got to
life.
talk about baby
But
prep
I
too.
think, yeah, well, a little bit. No, yeah, we will. But it's fascinating to me. Like you were so far ahead of the curve. Like when I was using dating apps in like the mid 2010s, like I had started using them when I lived in New York City because that was like it started to feel mainstream there. And before that, I was kind of like, it's like a little strange. I don't know. And now it's like we get to the point. So like my wife and I met at a wedding. And now when we meet people and they're like, how do you meet? They're like, oh, wow, you met the old school way. You met the traditional way. Like now it's so common to meet your partner on apps like this.
It really did start to change with Match in 1995. And now, I mean, I hear about the blowback against the apps and people hate them and so on. And I have two sons who are still single, and I know they go on and off the apps. And I'm single, and I go on and off the apps. And it's just kind of the way it's done nowadays. I mean, Match was accused, or online dating has been accused of, increasing polarization, increasing income inequality, because fundamentally, with the apps, you tend to meet somebody who's more like you in terms of their socioeconomic education and political status. I mean, that's the truth. And maybe that makes for better marriages. I don't know. I haven't seen that research yet.
I would bet that there's such a wide range. Like some people are very similar to each other and all those things and make a great match. And then other times it's the true like opposites attract. So there's a whole world there. But either way, you've been a big help in helping find love for so many. You've literally created, you know, families and generations that would not exist if not for your technology. So that's got to be pretty rewarding.
Yeah, it has been.
Let's go from couples and marriages to babies. So real natural, you know, skipped a few steps, but natural career arc there.
I think there was 20 years in between. Yes.
Just skipped a couple decades, but
Yeah.
I really, really want to talk about Baby Quip because this is something that when I found out about your company, it was such like a relief just thinking about it because you know, at the time of this recording, our daughter Jamie is about 8.5 months old. And you know, we thought it was important to get some travels under our belt with her early on. So we've done some trips to visit, you know, the grandparents in Florida and some weddings. So we've done a few flights with her back and forth. And the biggest stressor when traveling, and my wife Dana is unbelievable with this, but like getting together the list of like packing of all her clothes, all of the, you know, strollers and pack and play and diapers and all that stuff. And it's just such an endless list that it literally, when you become new parents, it like doubles or triples your time to prepare for anything. And so when I heard that you can rent baby gear, I was like, where has this been my whole life? Which is, you know, it has been around. I just was an idiot. So it's a brilliant idea. So how did you come up with this solution in the first place?
The truth is, I've been an entrepreneur in many companies. I never have come up with the idea itself. I've been the one to say, oh, that's a good idea, and I can do something with it. So Match was a friend of mine from business school, and he bought a bunch of URLs and started a classified advertising business, of which personals was one. And then I was at TrustArc, And that was privacy certification. I came in and I turned it from nonprofit to for profit. And again, wasn't really my idea, but I was living in San Francisco. I had just left my last company. I had bought a house up the street from Airbnb and was renting rooms in my house. It started out as a lark on Airbnb. I'd even tell people I was embarrassed. All of a sudden, though, I'm getting insight into this way that people are traveling. And I'm also getting insight into what it's like to be a gig economy person and a host. And I started to think about what are the businesses that are going to evolve. And at that point, you know, 2013, 2014, you're seeing property management companies and cleaning companies. And I happened to be advising a place called Women's Startup Lab, kind of a pre-accelerator for entrepreneurs. And a gal from Santa Fe, which is my hometown, came to Women's Startup Lab. So I said, yeah, I definitely need to talk to her. And she had the baby gear rental business. And it was called Baby Airs. And she started to talk about it. And before she finished her pitch, I said, well, I should be your CEO. And we joined forces and launched the company in 2016. And she left in 2017. Startups aren't for everybody. My son, Joe, who had spent 5 years at Accenture doing technology, he came in and became the CTO. So that's how it started. But do you ever watch American Idol?
I used to. Or have you? Used to growing up. My brother and mom were big fans of it. So I know the early years, you know, all those big names.
All right, that's fine. And you know how sometimes they'd say good song choice for you or bad song choice. This was good song choice. I mean, I looked at baby gear rental for traveling families. And I was like, hey, it's a marketplace. It's early stage. It's going to depend on building a really trusted brand, which is really, again, what sort of set Match.com apart was, you know, we really thought through dating safety and what women wanted. And those were the kinds of things that would make Baby Quip a big success.
Well, kudos to you for seeing this as a giant opportunity and not a giant, well, maybe you saw it as a giant challenge too, but like an achievable challenge, because I think so many of us out there would see this and be like, oh, that's an awesome idea, but like, I don't want to deal with the logistics and all that behind the scenes and creating a market and sharing economy in that world. So like, it seems incredibly complicated. How have you, I guess, simplified the whole concept as best as possible on the back end?
First of all, and I say this to entrepreneurs all the time, you can get very, very overwhelmed by everything that has to happen. And the key thing is don't worry about tomorrow's problem today. And when we first started out, okay, for me, you know, because I knew I'd have to put some money into it, not to mention time, I wanted to see how hard was it to get supply and how hard was it to get demand? Simple question. So let's open a few markets. Let's see what happens. It sort of reminds me of when I was a kid, I'd throw the ball down the playground and see what would happen. You know?
Ball, business, same thing, yeah.
Yeah, same thing, right? Just see what would happen. And what we found is there was pent-up demand. As soon as we put supply in a market, there was pent-up demand. I think the other thing that we recognized is moms were looking for gig economy jobs they could do with their kids, okay? And that used their particular skill set. At the beginning, getting supply was a big challenge, but over time, we kind of figured out what they needed in the back end, what controls they needed. Basically, they have to be able to manage their calendar and manage their area and be able to adjust their inventory. One of the early hacks that we have, we still have it, so it's not had, was we pay our quality providers. These are the people who own the baby gear. And let me back up. We're a gig economy marketplace. So we have independent contractors who we call quality providers. And they are the ones who own the baby gear, deliver it, pick it up, clean it, etc. They are mostly moms, okay? And this job, they could start with the gear they already have, but over time they build up their inventory. And the more inventory you have, the more orders you're going to have because you could supply the demand. So we knew that that was going to be an issue. And one of the things that we put in place early on, in fact, Carrie, the co-founder, came up with the idea, was pay them right away. Don't wait until the order is complete. Pay them right away. There's a little risk that they could take the money and run. But guess what? Moms don't do that. Okay. And that way they have the capital to go buy the gear. Now, that works for a lot of the gear. Maybe doesn't work for a full-size crib or something fancy like a Snoo. But, you know, within a day or two, you can go to Target or Walmart or Amazon and get whatever you need. So that was a little growth hack that we had at the very beginning.
No question. You have to have that. Like, you have to take care of your people. And especially when it's like people that aren't I mean, I don't know what the employment status, how that technically works out, but like those who contribute in terms of, and are thinking of it as more of like a gig thing. That's really nice to know that they, I mean, they have that guaranteed money right away. How about on the, as far as how do you like physically, well, I guess hypothetically online created this gig economy. So like, how'd you go out and pitch these moms, if you will, on this could be a great opportunity for you?
Especially at the beginning, most of them came because they were customers. And so they thought, hey, this is a good experience. I can make this work. And needless to say, they'd be traveling to, let's say, Los Angeles, but they'd be traveling from somewhere else. So at the beginning, our map of where we had markets was all over the place. And I remember a bunch of VCs telling me, or you should just focus on one market and get it right. I'm like, no, we're a travel brand. We've got to go wherever people are traveling. And guess what? People travel all over. I mean, we're recording during the shutdown, which may or may not end.
may or may not during this recording. We'll never know. No.
Right. But right now, a lot of flights have been canceled and all that. It's killing me. I mean, come on. Right before Thanksgiving, this is really kind of a bummer. But I mean, we'll have a fine year. But the point I'm making is people travel all over in this country. I mean, I remember early on, we saw that we had like a storm of orders in Eastern Washington State. And I'm like, what's in Eastern Washington State? Never heard of this place, you know? Sure enough, there's this great resort. People go there all the time. And, you know, there's places like that all over the place, middle of Oklahoma, certainly in New Mexico. It's kind of funny. And of course, the big markets, Hawaii, Los Angeles, New York, Florida. Really big.
Your business is like, it reminds me back in business school of like a business we'd analyze as a case study, because like you have like a gold solution, but there's a lot of parts involved in making it work. And I think it's like, there's some awesome different routes you could go down in terms of like, do you keep it independent for, you know, the people that contribute to the equipment? Do you partner with others? And I know you guys have had a partnership with, I think I'm saying it right, VRBO. It's not Vrbo.
No, they say Vrbo.
Oh, they do. Okay. See, I heard on a different podcast, VRBO. I always thought it was Vrbo. So I just made myself look like an idiot.
Well, it used to be VRBO.
Oh, okay. Well, now I'm just further making myself look like an IDIOT.
Yeah. So from the very beginning, I wanted to have hospitality partnerships. But I also knew that we would have to get to a certain point in our brand development, in our reach, in our capacity before we really could do that. And I've heard of so many startups like, we're just going to get the partnership and that's how we're going to grow. And it's like, no. You got to build a brand. You got to build some customers. I mean, by the time we signed the deal with Vrbo, we were in 20,000 plus zip codes. We covered all the markets that they needed us to cover. We had a mature trust and safety program. You know, we had liability insurance. We had background checks. We had inventory management so we could pull recall. You know, we didn't have those things 6-7 years ago, right? I mean, and those things are also critical to a partnership, right? So it takes a while, but at this point too, especially for marketplace businesses, we absolutely dominate the category. And it would be very hard for anybody to come in and build the supply and build the trust and safety program and build the breadth of offerings that we have now. It's kind of exciting to be sitting here in a catbird seat.
It is. And I keep wondering, like the terms cleanliness and safety have come up. And so I want to explore that route a little bit, because I was wondering, like, you know, like as new parents, like you want everything your baby touches to be as clean as possible. You want everything they look at to be as clean as possible.
Yeah, no, I get it.
There's a couple dates I want to bring up that are kind of crazy dates. One, today at the time of this recording is my wife and I's anniversary. So love you, Dana.
Okay.
But nice. I was just thinking of that because the date that you were on Shark Tank with Baby Quip was actually my birthday.
March 6, 2020.
Yep. Not my birth year, but birthday. And that was, of course, crazy, crazy timing because you were on Shark Tank and then like the world, well, the Western world as we knew it, shut down like right after that. So how did that whole experience like impact how you guys viewed cleanliness and sanitation and kind of keeping that top of mind with customers?
Yeah. So on that, from the very beginning, like I said, I knew trust was important to Match. I knew trust and safety was going to be important to Baby Quip. And we developed cleanliness standards and got during the pandemic sanitation standards and all of that. But like every marketplace, we have review systems, we have training systems. But when it comes right down to it, Max, these are moms serving other moms. We have served almost 400,000 orders. And I would say it's well less than 1% have we had issues with cleanliness. So, and we have a 90 plus net promoter score. That's like world class. Okay. Like Apple doesn't have a 90 net promoter score.
especially with them recalling their new design that didn't do as well, but yeah.
I guess so. Okay. But you know, maybe when we're as big as Apple, it'll be hard to have a 90 net promoter score. So we went into Shark Tank super excited. March is usually a really great time for us because of religious holidays and spring break. You know, our quality providers were ready with all this gear. We had told them, get ready. We certainly saw the spike in visits, and then we saw the spike in cancellations. And I mean, the cancellations this week are sort of reminiscent of that.
Because of all the flight stuff.
Yeah, because of all the flights. I mean, not nearly as bad. We were 8 people, now we're 16. But our business has quadrupled. I mean, I can't even remember how much we were doing in 2019 compared to, you know, we'll do 125,000 orders this year. So we had a lot less to lose, right? We were able to scale back. We really focused on our insurance program during that time period. So it was something we could really do. And I had already raised some money through a crowdfunding campaign. I'm doing a crowdfunding campaign, my third one now, in part because our customers love us and they want to contribute. So I had money. We got government money too, which was a first in my career. And by February of 2021, Florida kind of started to have a lot of vacationers and people using Baby Quip.
I mean, you hear about businesses that have seasonality and are impacted by a lot of things, but I guess I never really realized it till this interview, like how big of an impact travel and ability to travel has on your business. And I think your best friend, you know, you're basically a brand ambassador for every travel advisor and travel company and rental company out there, because you guys are, you know, two peas in a pod there.
Travel is massive, though.
Yeah.
Do you realize how big? It's massive.
Yeah. What advice do you have for any fellow business owner out there who like, and just dealing with the punches, like dealing with some of those macro factors that you can't control?
Right. You can't control. So control what you can control. Like I said earlier, try not to get waylaid by all the things that could go wrong. Hire really good people who will stick with it through the ups and downs. I mean, looking back, I kind of wish I had spent more time thinking about the impact of seasonality. And I kind of wish I had spent more time thinking about how do you think about market size? Because early on, people thought we were a feature, not a company. I think now we've taught them that we are a company And we're going to be expanding into mobility, and we're already doing pet and beach gear. And these things are going to also really, I think, solidify our leadership. And I'm excited about them.
If you stole the words out of my mouth when looking back, but I always like to ask about how, like, what do you think has been overall in the lifetime of Baby Quip the biggest single driver of your growth?
People love it. They tell us all the time.
No, that's a terrible thing for the business. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. We save the vacation. We came to the rescue. I hear this all the time. And then we deliver against it. And that 90 Net Promoter Score is basically saying people tell other people about us good things all the time. And how do you build a trusted brand? I mean, sure, we have influencers and we do partnerships and spend money on advertising. And oh, AI loves us now. AI's just, we're all over. And it makes sense. We're the market leader. AIs, they get their signal from our SEO and what people say and so on. So of course, you know, it's fantastic. I'm not even paying them any money yet.
Yeah. Triple underline on that. Yeah. Okay. So you've been, what do they call it? Answer engine optimization. You've been doing that well before AI was nearly as big as what it is now. Well, speaking of love, I want to dive into a little bit more, some of the kind of compare and contrast some of those businesses, your businesses that we've talked about so far, because I think it's like, obviously your target customer is so important no matter what business you're in, but it's really, really fascinating that you were, I guess, focused on single people. Like, is that what you would say the Match target customer was?
Oh, Match? No, we were very specific.
Yeah. How'd you describe it?
We had Joanne. Joanne's about 28 or 29.
Shout out. My mom's name is Joanne, by the way. So we got a lot in common.
Okay. So she probably works in a tech company and she's still single. And I mean, this is who the target was in 1995, right? And what does Joanne do? Well, yeah, maybe Joanne goes to the bars, but she's really working hard. She's trying to build a career. How do we make Joanne feel safe using Match, you know? Our three brand words back then were safe, anonymous. Anonymous was really important, and fun. You know, put a fun factor into it too. And for Baby Quip, it's millennial parents, probably working, new babies, want to have those Instagram moments, want to travel. It's important to them. They really value convenience.
Do you guys have a name? Is there a name like a Joanne
age? No, I could have made one up right now. What's your last name?
Brandstetter. Just call it Brandstetter. You know, flows as a first name.
and we have a secondary target for Baby Quip, grandparents.
Oh, yeah?
Grandparents are maybe huge. 20-25% of the business.
Well, my mom, Joanne, and I quote, She's like, I just want to buy stuff for her. Like, they want to buy stuff.
Oh, I know. There's that. She'll get over it by the time she gets to her third grandchild or something like that.
That's really cool. So like you guys did, and this is even in, you know, early 90s, you had like a detailed, I guess, exploratory work of who is our avatar, who is our customer like that. What can you share a little bit behind the scenes of like, what's the process like for getting so exact with that?
I had been working at Clorox Company in brand management. And really, you know, the idea was, identify the bullseye, and then you'll get people around that bullseye. You know, we also knew who we were targeting in terms of Max, the guy. And I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I think Max is great. You got me here.
Yeah. You know, the process was really kind of thinking about what is she caring about? What is her journey? How will she even find out about Match? I mean, early on in Match, we were doing affiliate marketing and spam, and we were doing all kinds of, we'd show up to movies. Now for Match, it did make sense to focus on a geographic area. So at first we were in the Bay Area, so we focused on the Bay Area. But it wasn't long before we were everywhere. It was kind of amazing. Both Match and Baby Quip had a real problem that needed to be solved, or they solved a real problem rather.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to build a business without that piece there. What is a big difference you've noticed so far in working with the Joanne target customer versus, you know, the millennial parent or grandparent for the baby space?
Well, I think they're pretty similar. They're just a few years older.
It's a good way to put it.
And probably a lot more frazzled.
Mm.
I think that since the pandemic, travel, family travel is even more important. I think the pandemic really told people that we learned that travel can't be a nice to have. It's a must have.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So I think there's more intention about travel than when I was a young parent. I also think today's parents are, and I could tell you're probably like this, they're very specific about the kind of gear that they want. Like my kids deal with the pack and play, but like and today's parents, like my child does not sleep well in pack and play. I must have a snoo or must have a full size crib.
Depends on the budget for the snoo. Or you've heard of some, right. Some, I'm not going to name it, but I know someone who's, there's some big companies that one of their benefits is giving a snoo for 6 months to new parents. I'm like, that's pretty nice. Oh my God.
It is a nice perk, but
takes away from your business though.
Yeah. Some families feel like it's addictive and they're stuck, which is why it's great that we can offer snoos when families travel, because otherwise there's no way they can move the snoo around.
Yeah. Well, for the record, we love the pack and play, and that it is fun, the evolution from like, you know, bassinet to crib and all that. But pack and plays on vacation have been like a lifesaver.
Right. I think the need for sleep on vacation is something that we know new parents really care about.
Totally. It's almost like you got essentials on essentials there. We need to have vacations. It's super important. And we need to sleep, and we need to sleep on vacations. So this is a really, really important fun area. And it's easy to be energized by the work you're doing.
Yeah, great.
Let's switch up with a couple quick, kind of more random, goofy segments. This is kind of more to get you, know your personality as a founder in and out of the business. So the first one I call the unusual. So quirks, pet peeves, weird talents. Doesn't have to be tied to the business or any of your businesses at all, but weird talents. What is, you could think of it as like a party trick, something you're really good at, but it really has no impact on the day-to-day.
Oh man, I can't tell it in public.
Can you give us a hint?
No, I'm kidding. Nothing that nasty.
That's great.
Oh, well, I mean, I just sold my last short-term vacation rental property. Since 2012, I've been doing vacation rentals, and I was super good at it and made lots of money. All my properties did very, very well. I was super host or premier host. And I probably was the Airbnb whisperer to a couple of dozen people. In other words, I helped them figure it out for themselves too. So I know that had I not done the internet, that I probably would have been really good at real estate, because I have been really good at real estate. Who knew?
Right. Yeah. And there's so many, all these amazing platforms.
I recently picked up pickleball. So that's kind of fun.
That's a good one.
I don't think that's unusual anymore.
Now it's almost as common as dating apps. So,
yeah, right. I should have invested in that.
Yeah, no one saw that one coming. All right, how about quirks? What's something a little quirky about your personality? Maybe your boys, your team, somebody calls you out for, but it's who you are.
Oh, I'm direct as all hell. I tell it like it is. And new employees, at some point, I'll offend them somehow. And I have to go back and apologize and say, I really wasn't that angry. I was just pointing out something.
Right. Yeah.
I forgot about it. I haven't held this as a, there's no demerits on you.
I have some longtime clients, shout out Ann and April, who they, same sort of thing. They say they're very forthright with their feedback and their direction. And so they literally name their business Forthright People and Forthright Business, because they're like, hey, it's in the name.
Right, right. So you know, like almost anything, you embrace it. And I think that probably what I don't see that other people see about me is I do have a risk profile that extends beyond my startups. I was early on in expanding my vacation rental properties. I do things, buy things. I've been known to be called gadget girl, early adopter on all kinds of things. I experiment.
Well, dating websites slash even, you know, using the internet in 1994, I would say you're pretty early adopter there.
Yeah, but the thing is it's not confined to my business. I will do all kinds of things early or just to see.
All right. And then what's a pet peeve you have? Something that just ticks you off a little bit, but in the grand scheme of life, it's not a big deal.
People who are late.
Mm, yeah. That's one I always struggle with. My wife is always on me for, understandably.
Yeah.
And she's a teacher, so she's always early. So it's yin yang.
It's just inconsiderate. Oh, people who run stop signs.
That's bad.
Oh my God.
That's just unsafe.
Today I was so pissed off. And then I was like, I shouldn't be this angry about it, but I really was pissed.
You should. Yeah. I get that way when people don't use their blinker. It's like so common when people don't use their blinker. It's like, oh my God. Before we offend any other drivers, let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. This is about all sorts of things. You ready for it? Oh no.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And oh no, in the same sentence. All right. Let's get wild. So, it's funny you mentioned your time at Clorox and joked that the target customer avatar is named Max, because I saw that one of the brands you worked on is Hidden Valley Ranch, and I am a huge fan of Hidden Valley Ranch. So like you were spot on with the name Max. You should actually use the name Max there. But what's something about working on Hidden Valley Ranch that is kind of like a little fun fact most people don't know?
Oh, gosh. This is going back a long time. All the different kind of varieties of Hidden Valley Ranch. But I have a better one for you. Okay? So I also worked on Kingsford Charcoal, and which is mostly the Target guys. Actually, this is a good story. So we were doing some market research on Matchlight, which is kind of the instant. And what we found out is the guys who bought Matchlight also bought more automatic cameras, did a whole bunch of stuff because they didn't want to fuck up.
No, you can swear.
They didn't want to mess up. Okay. That led to a campaign called Just One Light. And we had this like animated figure. It was pretty fun way back in the early 90s. So that was just a good example of where understanding your target can really make a difference.
Ranch and charcoal. Yeah, it's some fun gigs you had there. I also saw during your time there that you were an ABM, assistant brand manager, which I started my career as a assistant brand manager. So also I always thought, you know, we talked about it when I got to do some recruiting for them too. And we always talked about how like when you're an ABM or you're in brand management, it's almost like you're running your own mini business. And
oh yeah, no, it was a really good experience.
So many, you know, ABMs turn out to be entrepreneurs one day. So really, really cool. But in addition to like the avatars and the customer insights that you shared, what's something that you learn, like a skill from being an ABM that you still use today?
Oh, I think it's the discipline about target and unique, you know, who's your target and the unique selling proposition and all the different ways that you can really get to people. But between Clorox and Match, I did a stint at AAA, and I was brand manager of membership for AAA in Northern California. And boy, did I learn membership and direct mail. And that turned out to be pretty good in the internet days, too.
Oh, totally. I mean, my parents started a business, a family business, the year I was born, and they still are rocking today. Hippo Direct, that was started like on the foundation of direct mail and mailing lists. And then they evolved to add in, you know, email lists as well. But there's something about that, you know, now you'd call it traditional marketing that is still so powerful. Great insight.
There's a lot of emphasis on having, you know, technical skills, programming, et cetera. But a good marketing background is always valuable. Always.
All right. So you mentioned Santa Fe, which you're, you know, hometown, which I wrote in my notes is SF. And then you mentioned that you lived in San Francisco too. So I don't know which SF in my notes is which SF, but what's the best thing to do as a visitor or a tourist to Santa Fe besides, you know, I've heard all about the whole Breaking Bad tourism stuff.
Well, that's Albuquerque.
Yeah, but there's some stuff in Santa Fe too, I've heard.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I don't think Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul, they make Santa Fe look very chic. It is, but a little bit more than it actually is. It depends on who you are. I think if you're into outdoors, there's world-class mountain biking, hiking, skiing to go to Taos, but Santa Fe has a nice little mountain too. I think people think of it as a desert town and confuse New Mexico and Arizona, and it's like they are so different. Don't even do that. I mean, that's a pet peeve. I get crazy when people think New Mexico's Arizona. I'm sitting here at 7,400 elevation. Four seasons, it may snow this weekend. Kind of excited. Oh, so there's that.
I would be out of breath just talking.
Yeah, right. The other thing that I think people very much enjoy is just the art. And it's not just Southwestern art. It's all kinds of art. But there's a lot of Southwestern art, but it's very beautiful. And a very unique cuisine. That is not Tex-Mex, not Cali-Mex. It's its own thing.
What's the best dish that's like unique to the area?
Oh, God. Well, an enchilada, but a New Mexico enchilada, often ordered Christmas style, which means half red chili and half green chili.
Oh, I love that.
That's an insider. Yeah.
All right. And then last one, really hard-hitting one. What do you miss most about dial-up internet?
Oh, God. I don't.
Nothing. You don't miss the...
Nothing.
The
tone? No, no, man.
At least we've gotten a little speedier in that aspect.
Let me just tell you, I love ubiquitous high-speed wireless internet. Yes, give it to me all day long.
Well, Fran, thank you so much. Just really appreciate your time and the businesses that you've created and are creating over the years and problems you're solving. So thanks for helping out all the Maxes and Joannes and all the other avatars out there. So really appreciate you coming on. I know if people want to check out Baby Quip, they can do so at babyquip.com. That's babyquip.com. Which I think I spelled something right for once. And where's the best place if they want to connect with you online, Fran, or anywhere else you want to shout out?
They could find me on LinkedIn, Fran Meyer, M-A-I-E-R.
Perfect. Awesome. Right, last thing. Stage is yours. It's just final thoughts. It could be a quote or words to live by. Whatever you want, take us home here.
Live well.
I promise I am not eating anything during this outro, but you never know. Thank you so much, Fran, for coming on Wild Business Growth, sharing your wild story, wild stories, and all you do. And thank you, wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow or subscribe to Wild Business Growth on your favorite podcast listening app or watch on YouTube. YouTube is at Max Brandstetter. You can subscribe there. You can learn all things Max Podcasting, the Podcasting to the Max newsletter, anything else about the podcast at maxpodcasting.com. And until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!